Well, thank you, Mr. Hawk, and good afternoon and happy Sabbath to all of you here, and welcome to some of the visitors we have with us today. Great to have you joining us here in Akron, Canton, and as always, a warm welcome to any of you with us today on the webcast as well. Hope your Sabbath is going well. Now, we can all probably remember some of the things that kids may have said to each other, many of which have been around for quite a few years. Now, I remember some of these from way back when I was a kid, and maybe some of you will remember some of these as well. And although the wording may be slightly different, the meaning or intent is still the same. And here are a few that some of us may be familiar with. When someone was frustrated with you and they said, "You just need to get a life." Or when someone wanted you to do something, they said, "You can't make me." Or about one that I almost always would fall for. Someone calls out to you, you look over at them and they say, "Made you look." Now it seems like I would get caught by that one, even when I knew it was coming. Now you can probably think of some others, but here are a few more that come to mind. "Talk to the hand, because the face ain't listening." Or how about another one? "I'm the rubber, you're the glue. Whatever you say bounces off of me and sticks to you." I never did like that one. And the last one that leads us into our topic for today: "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me." Now, my guess is that most of us, if not all of us, have heard that one before. "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me." We've no doubt heard that one, and we also know that that is false. It's just not true that words can't or don't hurt us. The fact of the matter is, words can, and words do hurt us. I believe it would be correct to say that every one of us has probably been hurt by the words of others to us, and we have probably hurt others by the words that we've said from time to time. The title of this message is "Words Mean Much, and We Can Make a Difference." Words mean much, and we can make a difference. Now, the words we use in our daily interaction is the fundamental vehicle that we use to convey our thoughts, our ideas, our support, our encouragement, our love, our concern, and sometimes negativity to those around us. Words mean things because words are the principal carrier of meaning to others. They are the very fabric of relationships. Our words are always at work, either building relationships or tearing them down. This is true for our families, true for our church family, and certainly true for others that we interact with as well. When we speak, it's our words that give the most important impression of ourselves to others after the initial impression of our outward appearance. It is not only the words that we speak, but can also be the words that we write. Playwright Edward Lytton said, "The pen is mightier than the sword." Our written words, whether on paper or on social media or other electronic means, can also be very powerful and very impactful. They can also be positive and build others up, or they can be negative and they can tear down. So our words, spoken or written, can have a positive and encouraging impact on others, or they can have a negative and a discouraging impact on others. So what can we do about it? Is it worth all the effort that it takes? Are we willing to make some changes in how we communicate with others? And most importantly, what does God expect us to do? Now, of course, this subject of communication, the words we speak, as well as the words we write, is a huge topic. The Bible has many, many scriptures that talk about our communication with others, the words that we speak, sometimes referred to as the tongue. Today, we'll review just 3 points that I hope will encourage all of us to remember that our words mean much and we can make a difference. Point number one is, don't sin with your lips. Don't sin with your lips. Turn, if you would, to Proverbs chapter 18. We'll spend a little bit of time off and on in Proverbs today, as you can imagine. Proverbs chapter 18. And we'll read just two verses here to begin, verses 6 and 7, with regard to not sinning with our lips. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 6. A fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for blows. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. Have we ever thought that our lips could be the snare of our soul? How many times do we think back on a conversation and maybe cringe a little because of what we said, or maybe how we said it? Sometimes we may realize it right away, almost as we are speaking, that we're wrong and we're sinning with our lips. Other times it may be later when we think back on what we said, and we knew that we should apologize to the person, and we knew we should repent and ask God to forgive us. What we say and how we say it is important to our spiritual growth. Let's also skip down now in Proverbs 18 while we're here to verse 21. Proverbs 18 and verse 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. That certainly emphasizes the importance of words, doesn't it? And Christ said in Matthew 12 and verse 37, by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. If we don't focus and pay attention to our words, if we're constantly sinning with our lips, it will affect our relationships with others, and it will eventually affect our relationship with God. How often do we find ourselves on our knees before God, asking for forgiveness for the words that we've said to others? If only we had bridled our tongue. Let's go back now to the book of James. Seems that any time you study words or what we would say, you'll end up in the book of James. Let's go back now to the book of James, chapter 1. Just pick up one verse here in James right now, James chapter 1 and verse 26. James 1 and verse 26. If anyone among you thinks he is religious or does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. Now, it is probably safe to say that many of the people that we are in regular contact with outside of God's church would consider us to be somewhat religious. That may be due in large part to the fact that we watch what we say, that we bridle our tongue, and we try not to sin with our lips. That is one of the ways we are different than those around us, and God has called us to be different. God has called us to come out from among them. Now let's read a bit more about our words in the book of James, this time in James chapter 3. Back a few pages to James chapter 3. And we'll begin reading here in verse 2. James 3 and verse 2. For we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. Look also at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds, they are turned by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot desires. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by Hades. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. Verse 8, but no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs. Thus no spring yields both salt water and fresh. Now James has packed a lot into these 11 verses, of course, but for our purposes today, it shows how difficult it is for us to tame our tongue, to not hurt and offend others by our words. Reading these verses makes us really realize that it is a job that we cannot do on our own. We need the help of God's Spirit every day to not sin with our lips. And one more thing to consider before we move on to our next point. What about those times when we are going through trials, and maybe it is a severe trial, or maybe it's an ongoing trial and a test that we've been dealing with for quite some time? Shouldn't others understand? Maybe cut us a little slack? More importantly, shouldn't God understand how tough things are for us? And maybe be more understanding if we sin with our lips during troublesome times in our life? Do we sometimes feel like we should get a pass whenever we say things that we know we shouldn't because of all the stress and all the pressure that we may be dealing with? Are we justified during these times if we sin with our lips? Now, there's an example in the Old Testament that I believe will show us if trials in life are an excuse for us to sin with our lips. It starts in my Bible on page 507, the story of a man from the land of Uz. Now, we're familiar with the first chapter of the story of Job. We'll turn back there now. If you'd like to follow along in Job chapter 1, we'll just hit the highlights here to set the stage for us in the first chapter of Job. And Job 1 and verse 1 says that Job lived in the land of Uz, that he was blameless and upright, a man who feared God and shunned evil. And going on down in chapter 1, Job had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He had much livestock and great possessions. Job was known as the greatest of all the people of the East. Job was a very wealthy man. Then in verses 6 through 10, God and Satan have a conversation. God tells Satan, "There is no one else like Job on the earth, blameless and upright, one who fears God and shuns evil." Satan counters back that God has protected Job and greatly blessed the work of his hands. And then in verse 11, Satan lays down a challenge. Let's read that together here in Job chapter 1 and verses 11 and 12. Job 1 and verse 11, Satan speaking here, "But now, stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, all that Job has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power, only do not lay a hand on his person." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. And we know what happened next. Job lost all of his many flocks and herds and his great possessions. Virtually all of his servants were murdered. All 10 of his children were killed when the house that they were in collapsed on top of them. Talk about having a bad day. Job had a day that is totally unimaginable, I believe, for any of us. But verse 22 in chapter 1 says, "In all this, Job did not sin, nor charge God with wrong." That's incredible considering the day that Job had just gone through. Now let's continue the story in Job chapter 2. In Job chapter 2, we'll begin reading here in verse 1. Job 2 and verse 1. "Again, there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?' So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it.' Then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil? And still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause.' So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face.' And the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life.' So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. In verse 9, then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. What an incredible statement that is. In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Now, it's safe to say that none of us have gone through as many severe and challenging trials as Job went through in such a short time. It's probably also safe to say that we don't and can't know what it would have felt like to be in Job's shoes, to lose all 10 of your children, to lose all of your possessions, and to be in agonizing pain from head to toe, with the only relief coming from scraping your body with a broken piece of pottery. Although it may be impossible for us to know the anguish that Job felt, we all have faced severe trials in our lives from time to time. And we all know what a difficult trial in our life can be like, and some of us may still be dealing with some very challenging situations now. Maybe it's an ongoing trial for us. But in all this, we should try to follow Job's example and not sin with our lips. The difficulties and the challenges in our lives do not give us the right to mistreat others with our words. Next time you're having a rough day, try reading Job chapter 1 and 2. We should always be aware and try not to hurt or offend others with our words, regardless of the situation we may find ourselves in. Even when we're dealing with a difficult trial, we should not sin with our lips. And something that may help us accomplish that goal is our point number 2. Our second point, hit the pause button before we speak. Hit the pause button before we speak. Or simply put, think before you speak. Now, it's a choice we make many times every day, how we respond and how we talk to others. Do we just react immediately, or do we sometimes pause for just a moment or two before we just blurt out a response? It can be so easy to be reactive. You can get caught up in the moment and what someone else says, perhaps. Then you say things you don't mean, or you do things you later regret. And after the damage is done, you think, if only I had paused for just a moment to think about it, I never would have reacted that way, never would have said that, never would have done that. Stephen Covey, in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families, talks about this concept and the positive impact that it can have if we learn to pause a moment and not just react. In chapter 1 in his book, in the section on habit 1, being proactive, he said, what we all need is a pause button, something that enables us to stop between what happens to us and our response to it and to choose our own response. I'd like to read a section from Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families, about the space between what happens to us and our response. On page 27, Covey writes, many years ago, when I was in Hawaii on a sabbatical, I was wandering through some stacks of books in the back of a college library. A particular book drew my interest, and as I flipped through the pages, my eyes fell on a single paragraph that was so compelling, so memorable, so staggering that it has profoundly influenced the rest of my life. In that paragraph were three sentences that contained a single powerful idea. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space lies our freedom and our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. For any of you note takers, I'm going to repeat that in case you're trying to jot that down. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space lies our freedom and power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. And Covey goes on to say, I cannot begin to describe the effect that idea had on me. I was overwhelmed by it. I reflected on it again and again. I reveled in the feeling of it. I personalized it. Between whatever happened to me and my response to it was a space. In that space was my freedom and power to choose my response. And in my response lay my growth and my happiness. The more I pondered it, the more I realized that I could choose responses that would affect the stimulus itself. I could become a force of nature in my own right. End quote. Now, Stephen Covey goes on in his book to explain more about the importance of hitting the pause button before we speak. So as it pertains to our words and what we say to others, developing the habit of a pause button for just a moment or two before we speak can help us to build others up by what we say. And here's a little food for thought, maybe something we may want to reflect on from time to time. What if everything we said this past week had been recorded and was played back for us to listen to? What if we had to sit and listen to every interaction we had last week, every response that we gave to others, every word we said, and how it sounded? What if we had to give account for the times that our words, our response, our interactions with others were not kind, were not loving, were not respectful, were not positive and uplifting? Sometimes we may find it a bit painful to listen to some of the things we said to others and maybe how we said them. We may have times we wished we actually had a pause button we had pushed to give us just a moment or two to think about how to respond, or to give us time to choose our words more carefully, or maybe to choose just to say nothing. As I was preparing this message, I realized how much more often I need to hit that pause button so I can choose an uplifting and positive response more often, or maybe say less, and sometimes maybe just say nothing. Let's start with a couple of proverbs as we begin to see what God's word has to say about the words we speak. Let's start in Proverbs chapter 21. It may well be a memory scripture for some or many of us, but Proverbs 25, I think I said 21. It's Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 11. Proverbs 25 and verse 11. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. And the New American Standard says, like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. Carefully chosen words can gently persuade, can break down hostility, can be engaging, encouraging, and comforting, and can also bring peace. If we can just pause for a second or two, we may be more able to choose a response of words fitly spoken. Turn now, if you would, to Proverbs chapter 15, back a few pages to Proverbs chapter 15. Proverbs 15 and verse 23. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. We all know how good a word spoken in due season to us can be. Many times that may be the words we can choose more carefully if we remember to hit the pause button first, maybe just for a few precious seconds to allow us to choose our response instead of just reacting. That undetectable pause for just a couple of split seconds can help us to speak good words in due season. That tiny space of time may mean the difference in our words being more uplifting and encouraging than if we just immediately blurt out a response without any thought. Here are a few more proverbs that may help us to see the benefits of hitting the pause button, a tool that we can use to help us strengthen our relationships with others. Proverbs 12 and verse 18. Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 18. There is one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. And while we're here in Proverbs 12, skip down to verse 25. Proverbs 12, 25, anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad. And back now, Proverbs 15 and verse 4. Proverbs 15 and verse 4. A wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness in it breaks the spirit. Here we see the wonderful benefits of a quick pause to choose encouraging, uplifting, and kind words when we talk to others. The tongue of the wise, the words of the wise, promote health. Our good words, words we pause a second to choose more carefully, can make others happy and can bring gladness. And a wholesome tongue, our thoughtful words to others, is a tree of life. And while we're here in Proverbs, let's look at Proverbs chapter 15 again and read verses 1 and 2. Proverbs chapter 15, verses 1 and 2. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly. If we hit the pause button before we react and before we respond, we can better choose our words wisely. And we can more often give a soft answer, and we can use harsh words much less frequently. Do we sometimes realize afterwards that in our conversations with others, we may have given our opinion, our answer, or our solution to someone a bit too quickly without really thinking? Hitting the pause button for just a second or two may help us to give a more positive and encouraging answer in our response to others, and sometimes may help us to say less or maybe just say nothing at all. Turn, if you would, back to the New Testament, to Colossians chapter 4. Colossians chapter 4. Read just one verse here, verse 6. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6. Colossians 4, verse 6. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Sometimes just a short pause may help us to follow Paul's instructions here, that our words can be spoken with grace and seasoned with salt so we can know how to better answer each other. Let's read a few more proverbs that will encourage us to think before we speak, to hit the pause button for just a second or two so we can in turn better respond in our words to others. Back to Proverbs chapter 13. Proverbs chapter 13. And we'll read verse 3. Proverbs 13 and verse 3. He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. And while we're here, a couple of pages back, Proverbs 15 and verse 28. Proverbs 15 and verse 28. The heart of the righteous studies how to answer. Studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil. How can we study how to answer if we always respond without thinking? Both of these proverbs speak to the benefits of quick thinking before we speak, hitting the pause button for a second or two to guard our words. Now, most of us have probably heard the old saying, you have two ears and one mouth, so you should listen twice as much as you talk. And James wrote about this in James chapter 1. Let's go there now to James chapter 1. James chapter 1 and verses 19 and 20. James 1 and verse 19. So then, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. If we're swift to hear, two ears, but we're slow to speak, one mouth, that will also help us to have the time, maybe just a few seconds, to give a more positive and a more encouraging response. If we heard a recording of everything we said to others just this past week, we may realize that there were a few times that we would like to take back what we said. But words cannot be unspoken once we've said them and the damage has been done. Remembering to think before we speak can help us to be much more encouraging and uplifting in our conversations with others. It can be a game changer for us if we develop the habit of hitting the pause button for just that second or two so we can choose our response more thoughtfully. And it can be a valuable tool to help us build stronger relationships with others. Now, as a lead into our final point for today, I'd like to read a fictional story that I got some years ago from Mr. Chris Mowen. And I appreciate him sharing this story with me as it fits in well with our final point. So if you like the story, thanks go to Mr. Mowen. A group of frogs were traveling together through the woods when suddenly two of the frogs fell into a deep pit. All of the other frogs gathered around the pit, looking down at the two at the bottom of the pit. When they saw how deep the pit was, they told the two frogs that there was no way that they could jump out of that pit, that they were both as good as dead. The two frogs ignored the comments from the others. They began jumping with all of their might to get up out of that pit. The other frogs kept yelling down and telling them to stop trying. There's no way to jump up out of that pit. They should just give up and die. But the two frogs just kept on jumping. Finally, one of the frogs took heed to what all the other frogs were saying. He gave up and fell down dead. But the other frog continued to jump as hard and as high as he could. The other frogs continued to yell down to him to stop the pain and frustration. Just give up and die. But he continued to try even harder, jumping with all of his might. Finally, he jumped high enough to make it up out of the pit. Once he was out, the other frogs gathered around and said, "Why did you keep trying? Didn't you hear us yelling at you to just give up and die?" The frog explained to them that he was deaf and couldn't hear them. He thought the whole time he saw them yelling down to him that they were encouraging him all along to just keep trying. Now, this made-up story can help to illustrate the power in our words, the words we speak, not only what we say, but sometimes how we say it. Encouraging words spoken sincerely and enthusiastically can help to lift someone up and have a positive effect on them. It may also make a difference in helping someone during a difficult time in their life. Discouraging words, on the other hand, will have the opposite effect and can tend to pull someone down, especially if they're facing some type of trial in their life. So this brings us to point number 3. Be ready with encouraging words. Be ready with encouraging words. Now, it sounds pretty simple, but it can have a great positive impact on the people we talk to if we're willing to work at it consistently. One of the keys is to think positive thoughts instead of negative thoughts, so encouraging words become more natural for us. It takes work and discipline on our part, but the end result is what God sees in our heart. Are we always ready with an encouraging word? A physician sometimes looks at the tongue to determine the condition of the body. We probably heard before that spiritually the tongue is the dipstick to the heart. What we say and how we say it can be an indication of where our heart is. I mentioned this verse earlier, but let's turn now to Matthew chapter 12. We touched on it earlier, but let's read a few verses here in Matthew chapter 12. Matthew 12, and we'll begin reading here in verse 33. Matthew 12 and verse 33. Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad, for a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. And verse 36, but I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. These are powerful and sobering words from Christ, that we are responsible for every word, whether it's negative and discouraging or positive and encouraging. This should help to motivate us to be more ready with an encouraging word. When we focus more on encouraging and building others up, we'll also grow in humility, as we'll spend less time and words talking about ourselves. As we grow in humility individually and collectively as a congregation, we will also grow in unity. Turn, if you would, to Philippians chapter 2. Back to Philippians chapter 2. Philippians 2. And we'll read verses 1 through 5. You can follow along. I'd like to read this section of Scripture from the New International Version, Philippians 2 and verse 1. Therefore, if you have any encouragement for being united with Christ, if any comfort from His love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus. Now, when we're looking out for the interests of others, if we work to see the good and positive in others, our encouraging words will naturally follow good thoughts that we are thinking. That will help us to have the same mindset as Christ. One of the most encouraging scriptures to help us focus our thoughts is found here in Philippians chapter 4. Back just a couple of pages to Philippians chapter 4. We'll read just two verses here, verses 8 and 9. What would be good for us to focus on in order to be encouraging to others? Philippians 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate or think on these things. The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and the God of peace will be with you. Encouraging words are a natural byproduct of positive thinking, of seeing and recognizing the good in others. It takes discipline and it takes work on our part, but the end result is well worth it. And by the way, it's what God expects from His people. Turn now, if you would, to Proverbs chapter 16. Back to Proverbs 16. Proverbs 16. And we'll read just one verse, verse 24. Proverbs 16, 24. Pleasant words are like honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. Pleasant words are like honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. It can be so easy to see the negative in others, isn't it? And so easy to talk about others with our friends. Gossiping is so easy to do, but it is contrary to God's way. We've all heard the saying, if you don't have something good to say, then don't say anything at all. A good principle for us to live by. If we can follow that rule more often and be more ready with encouraging words, then we will fulfill the words of Proverbs 16 and verse 24. Pleasant words are like honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. Kind, pleasant and encouraging words are not only appreciated by others, but they're pleasing to God as well. It is what He expects from those He's called to follow His way of life. We can ask God daily in our prayers to help us be ready with encouraging words, words that are pleasing and acceptable in God's eyes. David wrote of this in Psalm 19. Our final scripture for today, Psalm chapter 19. The words we speak should be pleasing and pleasant and acceptable to God. Psalm 19 and verse 14. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Such beautiful and such meaningful words from David, a man after God's own heart. Now we can pray that our words, our thoughts be acceptable to God. It's pleasing to God and a blessing to others when our words are positive and uplifting without going concern for others. If we set our minds to constantly look for the good in others, to think more on the positive things, and we daily include God in the process, then we will grow in the goal to always be ready with encouraging words. Now, the Bible has many, many more scriptures and many more examples about the importance of what we say and how we say it. Every day, our words are either strengthening our relationships with others or they are weakening those relationships. By including God in the process, we can all build stronger relationships with others by not sinning with our lips, by remembering to hit the pause button, and by being ready with encouraging words. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but kind, uplifting, encouraging, positive, and loving words will never hurt me. Our words mean much, and with God's help, we can make a difference.